A Wiggly World 114.
It's never straight up and down.
It's never straight up and down. It's never straight up and down. It's never straight up and down. Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. Wanna live in a wiggly world. 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 Wanna live in a wiggly world.
A wiggly world, a wiggly world. Welcome to episode 114 of A Wiggly World. We've been here together, you and I, for 114 episodes, and next episode is when Chiz wants me to go 114 or something, goofiness. But welcome to A Wiggly World nonetheless. 114, not yet at the 115. And you know, friends, it's great to be here, number one. I open a mic, start recording now, but I don't know when I'll be able to finish recording. And this show will not be the show that I wanted. I wanted a show where I revisit the final episode of the new Battlestar Galactica series, not the one from the 70s. And I need to revisit that ending because now I have a different understanding, a broader understanding of mythology, and now I want to approach that the ending of that series strictly from a mythological standpoint, from a mythological perspective, and how I feel differently about the ending now. But I have to go back and rewatch it, which I have not had opportunity to do. But I knew I wanted to try to get a show down, and it has been a tech week from hell. I had major server issues, and when you are a small advertising firm and something is wrong with your Exchange server, you're in trouble. So that had to take precedence, and it took about an additional, maybe 20 hours of work at the wee hours and things like this to move things around on my virtual server. What happened? My virtual server, tech talk, nobody cares about tech talk. My virtual server ran out of drive space, although from looking at it, from looking inside of my guest OS is inside of here, inside my virtual machines, everything looked fine. I had plenty of space. No problem there. Always keep an eye on it. However, certain things that should no longer have been there were still there when I examined more closely. So after 10 or 14 hours of just strictly moving around large 250 gig images with my heart in my throat, worried about these things making it back all right and not having to restore from backup, which backup, that's what it's there for. It's great to pull a few things from the backup, but it's always a little worrisome when you need to do full disaster recovery restores and you hope that everything has been going right for the past year, with your backups. But nonetheless, everything worked out fine. Everything's perfect. I've reclaimed 135 gig of hard drive space where I was down to a mere 3 megabyte at one point when I got my mail server back up the first time. And needless to say, it's pushed everything far, far away from where I would have liked them to have been. I wanted to sit down and do this Monday, but to be honest with you, I've been fighting various types of flus and colds since Chiz and I returned from our honeymoon. I sent out an email to the core group, the core supporters, people that pitch in or have pitched in over the years. Now, if you're not a member of this special email group, just drop an email to Wiggly at wigglysworld.com. And I'll gladly put you on my little mailing list. Now, this doesn't happen often. It is a small email supplemental when I don't have time to sit down behind a mic. And I also get a little more personal. As long as you promise not to, share the content of these emails around with the populace in general, like I'm some big sought-after scoop newsworthy celebrity. No, I'm not. It's just that there's sometimes I get a little more personal than I would on here, than I want to come across to the larger number of subscribers to this show and to my other shows. Now, also realize that your emails are piling up and they will be addressed. Have no fear about that. I also need to sit down with Chiz and cut an episode. But I wanted to try to do this in between recording different people for the next Week Talks Games 9s. WTG 9, We Talk Games 9. Hopefully, I'll have a release next Tuesday. As long as I don't get sucked into some type of tech vacuum like this past week. And sickness, and trying to get ready for my reception and all this. If you don't know me, then much of this won't make sense. But I just got married not too long ago. And if you really don't know me, if this is your first time listening, all I'm trying to do, very simply, is just change the world. One simple thing. And, of course, I get very upset when I fail. So today I want to touch on my vacation, marriage, honeymoon package, all the things that went along with that. What I've been watching lately on the television, I saw, I think, three new things, two movies and one new television series I just started watching that was suggested by one of our listeners, and you'll be titillated to find out who that was, I hope, as I was. Also, I want to talk about wood repair, repairing your wooden shingles and window frames, and how that relates to foam surround rebuild kits for your Serwin Vega AT-15s that you've blown out because they're from the early 90s. And hopefully you'll find something inspiring in this. I'll talk about my wedding, talk about the reception. And hopefully that will be a good show for you. If you're a first-time listener, I hope it's something to entertain as well. I know that you're probably most interested in the wooden window trim repair. Let me tell you that I bought the Elmer's $10 package. And I got to tell you, I was sweating at 10 bucks for this. It came in a little plastic pouch. And it said wooden repair kit for, you know, wood problems. Now, many of you don't know, I live in a refurbished chicken coop that had a wood shop built onto it, a reupholstery shop. And in that reupholstery shop used to be this studio. Now, my studio is in the chicken coop proper next to I'd say about a 10 or 12 foot, 100-year-old bar that actually came from my grandfather's bar and my great-grandfather's bar, which was called Sloppy Joe's in Colt Mount, Pennsylvania. And so the bar is here, the back bar, the under sink, and another back bar, because this bar was actually probably twice as long as it is now, and a giant mirror with some columns and stuff like that. So it's kind of neat that my studio is sitting right next to that, and that's where Stinky usually hangs out. Stinky the Game Master from our We Talk Game show, he usually hangs out at the bar. And he just stares at the karaoke machine that I installed. He never does any karaoke. He simply stares at it, and I have no idea. You know, I don't really try to talk to him too much outside of interacting with him for the show. And by the way, it was revealed to me that at my wedding, that no matter what voice or accent I put on, it's quite obvious that it's still just me, and I lose at those type of voices, because my voice cuts through, because I have like this quadra voice. It's composed of many different I guess you have two vocal cords, but I don't know how I get more than one tone in my voice, but that's what I have. And that's why I have a hard time doing the karaoke style singing games and music games for the various systems. I have to sing in falsetto so I can have a very thin voice. Or else, even if I'm dead on and just holding one note and I'm holding it solid, which I can do at times, the needle will be fluctuating up and it will be jumping up and down all over the place because I have this, like, multi-tone voice. So I always have to sing in falsetto and then I can get hundreds. So where was I? Of course, talking about the ballad of Gay Tony for Grand Theft Auto. No, I was talking about Elmer's glue wall wood repair kit. And somehow I got talking, oh yes, the bar and the chicken coop. So I used to have my studio over in this reupholstery section, but I renovated that to be Chizzy's, my wife's, room. It's her own room. It's pretty big. It's, I think, well, it's larger than her bedroom that she used to have at her old apartment. And it, you know, has a television and her bed and a computer desk and a little, I don't know what you call it, hanging closet. Because there's no closets in the chicken coop. Chicken coops usually didn't come with closets. And neither did the reupholstery shop. So it's like a hanging closet and some other things. And it looks entirely different than the rest of the home is just like refinished wood style paneling, crappy, dingy looking crap poop, cluttered with video game memorabilia and toys from the 1980s when I used to work in toys and things like this. And all different little tchotchkes and things that no one has. Big, giant, laser-cut, light gimmicks, advertising campaigns for Nintendo and KB Toys, and all different types of unique items like that that you can't see any longer outside of my room, probably, for many of these items. But when you go into her room, it's all painted. I repainted it. I put down new carpet. I put blinds and all different, not blinds, but yeah, blinds. And, you know, all different types. It looks like you're stepping into a little beach cottage. And that's exactly what she loves. So, but the outside of the house, I also repainted and made it look very beachy as well. But some of my wood is notwithstanding the test of time. In fact, the wood borers have done a number on a couple of these windowsill panes, which is incredibly interesting. Except for the one time that I got stung by a wood borer. I was trying to save it, get it out of my home. And I don't know if you ever saw these things. They look like giant bumblebees, but they go like this. And I had like some type of cloth that I had the wood borer in, but yet it still got its whatever it is on me. And it drilled this perfect circle into my finger, like down to the bone. And as it was drilling, it was going zzz, and it felt exactly like, you know, getting drilled with like an electric drill. I felt like I was getting a shock. And it was one of the most painful experiences I've ever had in my life. And I did not expect that, because they don't bite humans. they don't hurt humans, these wood borers. It did. It hurt. And it made a you know, big mark in that, you know, I carried around the scars for, you know, a few weeks. So I saw this Elmer's repair kit, rotted wood repair kit instructions. And I got it. And what it comes with is two little tubes of epoxy. One that's like a tannish color, another one the dark color. And these are epoxies. You open the tube and you slide out the epoxy putty. And the outer shell of the epoxy is one part of the chemical, and I guess the inner is the other part, the white part. And when you knead this and mix it all together, it gets hot, stinks, and then you can use it in 20 minutes, and then it becomes hard as rock or steel or whatever, you know, type of epoxy you're going for here, or a gimmick. So I'm quite used to epoxies, but because I was very upset with the contents of this. So it comes with two little tubes, tiny tubes, which they looked ridiculous when I tried to shove this into the bottom part of where all this wood was missing. Because, you know, it needs about four more tubes of this to actually fill in the part that's missing of my wood job. So it comes with those two things. It comes with plastic gloves, which, let me tell you, when you start rolling the epoxy, hey, what do you know? My plastic glove is now a part of the epoxy, and I'm getting stink heat on my thumbs and fingers because it disintegrates these plastic gloves that the Elmer's gives you with it. But the funniest thing, it comes with a tube, of Elmer's White Glue All, except it's a little more liquidy. But they call this the Elmer's Rotted Wood Stabilizer. But it's just a thing of Elmer's glue. So I sweat at getting this $10 thing, and I was rightful in sweating that. Because you'd be better off if you see this Elmer's Glue All Rotted Wood Repair Kit. Just either one, if you just want to glue something, buy a tube of Elmer's Glue All, the white wood glue, or just buy some other type of wood glue. It probably will work better and be just as effective, if not more so. And two, just buy some wood putty somewhere else that probably won't rock you as much as this gimmick did. I think that's all I have to say about that. But that was interesting, and it definitely was. It's very similar to my Parts Express Foam Surround Rebuild Kit, as I mentioned in We Talk Games in the Future. We Talk Games number 9. I've had these Serum Vega AT15s for a long, long time, and some people say, have remarked on hearing my stereo system, that I have the best sounding stereo system they've ever heard. Now, I don't have a subwoofer. I just have these two AT15s, and I have two surround sound speakers that are smaller. I think they're Advents. And I have like a Klipsch center channel speaker, which I love. And then these, like I said, these two AT15s are my fronts. And they deliver a lot of nice bass. So I don't have, you know, the, I don't have the, I don't know what to say, artificial sounding forced low rumbles. You could rumble the hell. I rumble stuff off the shelves all the time. But I really have, it's a much cleaner type of bass sound, I think, in my opinion. And that's why people have remarked that. But I don't know how long ago. I think the first cracks happened in my surrounding. If you ever seen Serwin Vegas, some people call them Kerwin Vegas, or I don't know what they call them. You know, Hochi Mochis. It doesn't matter what they call them. But they're very distinctive in that they have this fluorescent orange outer foam on the paper speaker. And that will rot out in time. And I think the first times I started, especially if you live in a chicken coop, a non-climate controlled environment, I think the first time that I cracked it was with my new Wiggly's album, the Inorganic Mumbians, because I have some nice low tones in there. And I tried to really save people's speakers, but I think I blew out my car speakers and I started cracks in these. But now both of my AT15s were totally destroyed and demolished and are just vibrating messes. And I really blew them out with this DJ Hero, as I mentioned in We Talk Games. And I really enjoy this game, and the music is great. If you like any type of mashups, and I mean any type of mashups, not just, you know, don't think DJ Hero, I'm going to hear rap and dance. Yeah, you will hear dance, but what the hell is music without dance? I mean, music and dance, it's all synonymous. So all music should be dance music. Not all music. Anytime you go to extremes, it's always not a good idea to use extremes. Always, music and dance, very intermingled. I love music you could dance to, and there's some music that you can't dance to that is just fine as well. but this music is really good. I think it will really appeal to everyone. I don't think anyone can really hate the majority of this music. Some songs, yeah, not so good. But the way that it plays, the mechanics of it, I think it's quite fun. And if you know anyone that has it, you know, go over there, check it out, and see if it's for you before you buy. But I think it's a blast. But it really blew out the rest of my speaker. So I went on to Parts Express and got this foam surround rebuild kit. Let me tell you that taking off those old orange things is one of the messiest jobs I think I've ever done. And it's messy and it's sticky and it stinks. But I can't wait to repair those. And it only takes about an hour to set. But I think I'll let mine set for at least a day before I fire them back up. But that's great. You know, $30. I think it was somewhere between $20 and $30 because I can't afford new speakers now. I have them on my wish list. That's not a hint. That's just a fact. I put things on my Amazon wish list just so that I can know what I need down the road, and I definitely need a new stereo system that can handle all the funky, fancy type of input you have nowadays with the kids. I would like a new set of speakers. I love my AT-15s. They're great. It's just that they were described as a reporter. For first-time listeners, I run a band called Trapdoor. I've had a modicum of success around the world, just not in any one lump location. Like, I can't walk into a room, everybody knows me, but I can go around the world, and I might run into somebody that has heard of me, heard of my music, or they always approach Trey Gunn, who was one time Chapman stick player for, pardon me, Burp, by the way, King Crimson. And he appeared on our first album, and I've used him in subsequent albums because we've actually had a best of, which is, you know, more in line with my humor style. We've had a best of, so he's on there. He's appeared on three of my albums, although he only recorded once. But he did record three songs, and people will come up to him backstage, people that are invited backstage and stuff like that, and say, and bring up that album. So it's kind of neat. It's kind of neat stuff. So almost a month ago, I went, Chiz and I went to, in fact, wait, I think it was a month ago, exactly when we left. We went to Florida. Oh, no, 17, I think. Oh, wait, October? Yeah, October 13th. Yep. And then we got married on the 16th. So we went to Florida. We loaded up, drove down to, and I'm going to have this video for everybody to look at. I thought I'd have it by now. I'll probably post it on the message boards. If you don't know about our message boards, please join up. Go to wigglesworld.com, and you will see that there's a link to our boards. In fact, if you're, if you like to type in the URL field of your browser instead of Googling a website address, you just go to wigglesworld.com/boards, and that'll get you there as well. And on that message board, I'll probably post a link to the MPEG file, because I can't put it in a feed. I can. People use copywritten material all the time, but I don't want to, because it does contain some songs that I don't own the copyrights to, and some images and things like that. So I'll just put it up in the link, and then you can watch our whole trip. And I didn't release it now because I'm going to edit just a tiny bit of the reception into the end, I think, and change some of the volumes I didn't get have a chance to work on properly before I debuted the video at the reception. But we went on the auto train. We both love trains, and we needed to take a lot of luggage. Chiz did, her wedding dress and all this other type of stuff, and special little things. So we decided to take the auto train and make that part of our trip. And for Chiz, she did great. She slept very well. I've been on the auto train before, and this time I did not sleep a wink. It was this, as I drove the 4 hours down right outside of Washington, D.C., get on the auto train, we're on the auto train. I didn't sleep that night. And then as soon as we get down in Florida, I had another 4.5 hour drive up to Sanibel Island, where we got married. And, so I was, you want to talk about running like a zombie, that's what I was. But we really made good time on the auto train, and that entailed really going fast. And now I think you only go like 80, I think you only go like 70 miles an hour is the fastest you go, or 70, 73, somewhere around there. But we had a very long train. We were at capacity, I think, either for cars or for passengers. I can't remember which one. But for some reason, it was incredibly bumpy, and a lot of horn blowing, constant horn blowing, I guess because we were going so fast and making such a good time. I mean, we arrived like, 2 hours early, but that got all eaten up because I think we were the third to last car out unloading. So it kind of was sad. And we didn't get a break on the way back either. We were one of the last cars to be unloaded when we arrived back in Virginia. So But it was, it was still nice. It was still fun. I was glad to share it with Chiz. And it's so much, more of an adventure than just, checking in your luggage at the airport. But I definitely recommend that, you get a room. Because I hear it's even more impossible to try to sleep in just sitting in the seat. And we had the deluxe room with the bathroom and the toilet. The bathroom and a toilet. No, as a toilet. And it also it doubles as a shower. You'll see the video, I hope. So we did that, and that was fun. That was neat. And then we drove up to Sanibel, and Sanibel was awesome. Oh, my gosh. I mean, it was just relaxed. It was very nice. Everyone quite friendly. Not really a lot of snooty people there either. I was expecting that, a lot of people are, of course, visiting. But if you drove to Captiva, which is attached to it somehow, there I felt like we were in Richville, like I felt like there was some attitude that happened with that. But on Sanibel, I didn't feel like that. Now, number one, if you do go to Sanibel, I highly recommend it. Number one, we stayed at the West Wind Inn. I really recommend that joint. But number three, and which should be number one with a star next to it, which makes it jump to the, it should be number 001. You have to make sure that you slather yourself with Deep Woods Off whenever you go outside, because there are these little no-see-ums that will bite the living daylights out of you, and you will itch for 2 weeks afterwards. It is terrible. So make sure that you just do that, and you'll have a fantastic time. The weather was great. We ran into the ocean. The ocean temperature was 86 freaking degrees. Back home here in Pennsylvania, they were getting snow. So it was 90 degrees outside. The water was 86. I've never been in water that was 86. It's on a Gulf Coast. And, of course, so you could walk out forever. But it's not very clear water. On the Sanibel Island... sorry about that crazy plant woman. My mom came. We had her watch. We had her plant sit while we were gone, and there was a plant that I forgot to take back. So she just came and delivered that. So where was I? Yeah, how beautiful it was. It was gorgeous. It was great. And there's a lot of neat little shops on the island. The other thing is if you want to get off the island for any reason, now you really don't need to. But if you want to go back and forth to, what's the military base down there? Fort Myers. It's $6 to get back over the giant bridge each time you come in. So, you have to tally that up. But everything that you could want or need during your vacation is really on the island. And there's a little wildlife preserve there, which, wasn't that exciting. But it was still neat. It was still fun. And you can rent bicycles and just pedal your butt around. And there's a very quaint little store on the island that you can go to. So I really recommend this if you want to get away to someplace. Prices, some of these places could be pretty pricey. I think the place we stayed at was rated for $300-some-odd a night. But you can go on these price lines and things like this, and you can get them for around $100 a night. And I know it's still a lot, believe me. I definitely didn't have the money for it, but... Chiz did, and we split things. We split things for our honeymoon and our wedding and the reception. And the reception ended up putting me in debt. And plus, I lost, because I'm completely independent, I lost about 2 weeks' worth of pay, which that really hurt as well. So, ouch on that. Well, let's not think about that right now. So then we drove back down to Orlando after a few days. We got married on Friday. It was great. It was a great day. Our wedding got pushed back, which was just fine, because a lot of things that happened during filming the wedding probably wouldn't happen if we would have been on time. But the person that married us was running behind and late, so got pushed back like 3 hours, which was fine, because we needed to study our lines anyway. I'd written our vows the day before. I wrote our vows and our ring exchange, whatever we say, and a little poem as well. And then, so we got married on Friday, and it was great. And we Sunday, we went to Orlando. Got there, we were going to hit all the theme parks. Stayed at, like, a, you know, a Hilton. And this one, now there, around the theme parks, there's where you could get your deals. And I recommend going to Universal. I love it. Make sure that you have, you know, more than one day to spend there. And probably more than 2 days. Because you really can just go to Universal for at least 3 days and still, you know, have a good time. I think 3 days might be the limit. Like, after that, then you might be, you know, doubling back or run out of things or something like that. But I think 3 nights, 3 days spent in Universal is not, it's just about right to do everything at your own pace, have a good time. Going into off season, I'm not sure that it, the lines are a lot less. No, number one, no doubt about it. But it was surprisingly crowded. So, but I don't think it was overwhelming, and it definitely was crowded at Halloween Horror Nights. It is stacked. If you go on the Halloween Horror Nights and want to go through the little walk-through haunted houses that they have, and that's all they are. They're like, you know, just giant walk-through haunted houses. They all have different names. Here's Freddy. Here's Frankenstein's. Wolfman. Here's Dracula. And they're all the same thing. You walk through, and real-life people jump out behind corners and startle you. And that's what they are. But for some reason, you want to hit all of them. I don't know why. And then they have, like, Beetlejuice's performing monkeys. I don't know. It's sort of like a Rocky Horror with starring Beetlejuice. It was kind of weird. We didn't see that stage show. And some of the rides they'll be running at night, too, although they weren't running any rides the night we went. But for this, if you're going even on the off season, which is the only time you could go to Halloween Horror Nights, because that's when Halloween is. But for Halloween Horror Nights, I seriously recommend spending the extra, I don't know what it is, $10, and getting the cut in line lanyard, or else you might be waiting in line for some of these walk-through haunted houses for like a half hour to 40 minutes. It's not unrealistic to wait that long to walk. It takes you three times, it takes you like five times longer to wait in line than it does for you to walk through the gimmick. But that was fun. We did that the one night. We went to a Hard Rock Cafe. I loved it. I really like the Hard Rock down in Orlando, as well as I really like, the only time we set foot in Disney was the first night we got down there. We ate at the Blues, the House of Blues. And I really like the House of Blues in Orlando, although they totally did not have the menu that they did when I was there 15 years ago, or whatever it was, 10, 15 years ago. That was kind of sad. But the really nice thing is any place I went really down there, the servers, I told them, you know, hey, I don't really eat meat. I don't eat things that move around, crawl around. And they fixed me up something for me. So they made me this really neat dish that was supposed to be with like a pasta or a linguine, but they made it with a giant dish of rice instead, and it was great. So we ate very well while we were down there. Every place we went, we ate very well. The only thing is, there's two things about Florida I noticed. Number one, I never got a good cup of coffee anywhere I went ever. I had good coffee on the train, and that's kind of surprising. But I did not have one good cup of coffee in Orlando, in Florida, period. And it might be because of how the water is treated down there. That might be what threw the flavor off for me, or it might just be a different way. Number two, I the first night we got that, we drove down down at Sanford Station, and we drove up to Sanibel. I stopped, and I really was hungry for some pizza. And we kept seeing signs for this Goodfellas, you know, Godfather's, I don't know what it's called, Godfather's Goodfellas Pizza, something like this. So we finally were able to pull off at one of these places where they had the Godfather's Pizza. We're like, yeah, this is going to be some classic Italiano pizza. This is going to be good, greasy, slimy Sicilian pizza or something. No, you know, it's like part of an AM PM. It's part of a gas station. So we looked at them, and To me, it looked great because I was starving. Not really, but as the kids say. And, my stomach was a little distended, but it wasn't too, I didn't have any flies on my lips. These are horrible jokes. I have no idea where this is coming from. We didn't get from there because there's really nothing for Chiz to have if I was going to try to eat that, as I drove. So we stopped at this place and I got this pizza on this, bread, and I don't know what it was supposed to be, but, all I got to say is my compliments to the chef. Chef Boyardee. It tasted like Chef Boyardee tomato paste with like worms on top of it. It was terrible. I don't know what it was, margarita. I don't know what it was supposed to be. So there was no good pizza to be found in all of Florida that I was aware of. That is number two, because I tried it at another joint. I think, you know, the best pizza I think we had was at the Monster Cafe, which we got sick from, and that tasted like a cafeteria pizza. But the rides are great, so you can't go wrong there. I love Universal. I could not wait to get on a Spider-Man ride. It was the first ride that we went on, and I think I went on it at least five times, if not more, because that's just one of my favorite rides. Now, I don't know if you go there, just go on it and have a fun time. And I was very happy to know that they still had the license for the Marvel characters and things like this. And it's got to be odd. And who knows how long that's going to last for. But they also just put in a Simpsons ride, which is a ride simulator. It's Spider-Man also is a type of, coaster simulator. Simpsons is really neat as well. And I really don't want to blow it, but it says it's a ride simulator. But everything leading up to going on this, really, it tries to swerve you. And I'll let you be swerved, because I was certainly swerved. It wasn't what I expected. And I had a really good time on that. We ended up going on that twice. We hit that right before we left on... We really crammed it in, man. We crammed it in. We left on a Thursday. We had to be at the station by 2. So that meant we had to leave at least by noon. We went to Universal that morning, checked out of our hotel, went to Universal that morning. I finally got, when you go there and park, the parking garage, to help you remember where you are, will play like a theme song and give you an icon to help remember where you are. Now, another great thing you do is you just take your cell phone and take a snapshot of the letter number combination, and then voila, you know where you are, or viola, as the kids say. And by kids, I mean no one except me, because I read things and don't realize that means voila when I'm young and a baby. Now, so you park in E.T., you park in Jaws, and it goes dun 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 dun. And you parked in Dr. Seuss. I parked just about everywhere, but I never got to park in Spider-Man. And I was so upset that I never got to park in Spider-Man. Well, guess what? Bright and early at 9 o'clock that morning, I parked in Spider-Man. And I was so happy. So what a way to end, to blow it out. And the last ride we went on was a Mummy. I loved it. I was not feeling the roller coaster. the first day we get there, I have a lot of irrational fears, and it's amazing. Now that I'm married, I will have health insurance, and I can't wait to start getting back on some medications to help with my anxiety disorders and what I've been diagnosed with, which is the bipolar disorders and things like this, manic depression. And, I've been managing it okay for the past few years. I've been doing well. Only when I'm really tired can I not keep it in check. But it's really going to be a relief to get back on Lamictal, which does not really alter me psychologically like some of the things that people take and get put on. It's an anti-convulsatory medication, but it does help stabilize my mood. So I can think like a creative person instead of like a creative person struggling against 90 zillion things popping into my mind. the cream of the crop I'm able to concentrate on when I can get back on this meds. So I'm very happy about that. And look forward to setting up an appointment. But I just haven't had time to sit down since we got back. So we went on to Mummy. When I got there the first day, I was having a hard time, no fooling, with the Seussical, the Dr. Seuss train. I was having anxiety just because it was, you know, higher than 12 feet in the air. I was having some sweats. And, you know, I realize it's completely irrational, but it's totally out of my control. It's not something that I can, you know, just tough through. I mean, I talked to myself in my head, but still, I was very upset. And that same day, Chizzy tried out the mummy ride, and I really could not wait to go on this mummy. They were building this mummy the last time I was there, and I really, really was looking forward to going on this thing. Because I had heard it's like an indoor roller coaster, and I thought, I could do Spider-Man, I could do this. Now, Spider-Man is a little bit different than an indoor roller coaster, but it still gives you the same sensation at moments as an indoor roller coaster does. I think Spider-Man's sort of like a fully interactive Merry Mixer coaster or something. Some type of amalgam of that. Incredible design. I love the Spider-Man ride. And it really didn't get blown for me until like maybe the fourth or fifth time. Then I started to lose focus, and it sort of got blown for me, as did the Simpsons ride. Simpsons, try to sit in the front if you can. And what else? So Chizzy went on the mummy ride to give it a test, because I was not really, I could not bring myself to go into it because I was too scared. And I watched this Blues Brothers reenactment thing. And let me tell you, yeah, the sax player was entertaining, and the Aretha Franklin lady was great. She was spot on, but you could tell that these guys were just, you know, phoning in. I mean, how many shows they do a day? 90? So, you know, think about that. Add that up. But the sax guy was always excited about what he was doing. So that's good. And they drove the Bluesmobile in, so that was kind of neat, too. So Chiz got average. Said, oh, yeah, this is good. It's just like, you know, it's not bad at all. It's not really a roller coaster. It's like, and I was trying to talk about, say, yeah, it's just like the choo-choo at Knoebels Grove, you know. It's just like the old steam engine choo-choo at Knoebels Grove, where you go through the woods and look at squirrels eating from the squirrel feederies. Which, by the way, if you ever get a chance to go to Knoebels Grove in Elysburg, I highly recommend going there. If you get your hand stamped or whatever, if you just want to buy tickets, either way is equally as fun. You have to pay, even if you have a hand stamp, you still have to pay for the haunted house. Still, do it. It's fun. And I said, yeah, the mummy's like the haunted house. And I think she said that mummy's like the haunted house. And I think I did, to try to calm myself down. And then I went on it. And let me tell you, all I did the entire ride was count. I just counted. Because she said, oh, the roller coaster part only lasts like 20 seconds. So I counted to 20 a couple times. And let me tell you, I was not enjoying myself at all. But the last day that we went, I was really feeling much more calm. Everything was good in my mind, in my marbles, and in my physiology. I went on a Seuss thing. Loved it. Wasn't scared of the Dr. Seuss train that the little, you know, two-year-olds are going on. And then I went on the Woody Woodpecker children's roller coaster. You know, I did great with that. And, you know, this is incredibly comical, I'm sure, for everyone to envision giant, gigantic Wiggly. And, oh, my God, my wedding photos. I look like I'm, like, 7 zillion pounds and, like, 8 feet wide. I look horrible. Believe me, I'm a lot better looking in person. I hope. So I went on Woody Woodpecker, and then I was ready. I wanted to go on that mummy ride. And let me tell you, I was so overconfident that I wasn't even thrilled by the mummy, but I enjoyed myself and I had a good time. And anyway, I don't know if I could have taken on the Hulk, because I think the problem is the outdoor. And when I walked, There was one time I started getting on Hulk, and then I was like in line. I was like, "What am I doing?" I got out. I bailed out of there. But I've been on roller coasters before. But as I, you know, I'm 43 now, and for some reason, as I got older, you know, these irrational fears got more and more. Fear of flying and everything else. Now, if I take a what do you call this here, Paxil or Craxil or whatever thing to knock you out. Xanax, yeah. So if I take a Xanax, then I'm all good with it takes those irrational fears right out of there. Don't do illegal drugs, kids, by the way, number one. Number three, don't overdose on drugs because it's terrible, and don't get, you know, hooked on them. And, you know, don't be afraid that don't be afraid to go on any medication if a psychiatrist recommends that to you. Your family physician should not be really prescribing the drugs that you see on television. You know, take this, I feel sad. You know, take this. Because they're not going to be monitoring you like a psychiatrist will. So make sure that you go see a psychiatrist if you're going to be put on any type of psychiatric medication. And don't be afraid of it. If you don't like the effects of it, then you tell your psychiatrist and you wean off of it if that's what has to happen. Or you take their advice of how to get off of it. And if you don't like that what the psychiatrist is doing for you, then you get a new psychiatrist. Listen, don't be afraid to go to the doctor. Don't be afraid to go to another doctor. If you don't like, if you don't think that your best interests are being catered to, don't be afraid of it. And by all means, don't be afraid to, you know, if it's an emergency, to call 911. That's what it's there for, people there to talk to you. And since I get so many, you know, requests, emails, and things about it like this, there's crisis hotlines all over the place. If it's a suicide, if you want to hurt yourself or others, call 1-800-SUICIDE of all things, 1-800-SUICIDE, or dial 911, and they'll put you in touch with a crisis hotline. If you're a teen, there's teen crisis hotlines. You know, don't go and hurt other people. These are stupid things to do. These are dumb. They're irrational. They don't help anyone. They won't help you. You, by all means, you have the right to take your life in your own hands, but don't hurt other people. That's just a douche thing to do. And also keep in mind that, like I said, now you can hurt yourself, but there are other people that have to live on with that, and they will live on with that forever, and they have to clean up your mess. So that being said, you know, do other things first before hurting yourself and others, and by all means, call 1-800-SUICIDE if you feel like that, or just call dial 911, and they will help you with your emergency. And although the people on the end of the 911 might be a little, you know, what's your emergency or whatever, you know, that's not your problem. That's their problem if they're, you know, tense on their job. And they will put you in touch with people that do want to hear from you and do want to hear what's going on with you and help you out. Okay, so that tangent's out of the way. And today we're 48 minutes. Still talking about my honeymoon. I like it. I do have to start getting ready for a We Talk Games interview, though. Loved the rides. Doing everything that we could. We hit all the really neat things. And then on the one day, we put aside for just going on the water-based rides. And there's not a ton of them. I think there's only like three or four. In Universal proper. We went on the Popeye, Bill Dratch, Popeye and Bluto's Rat Bilge Barge, Rat Barge Bilge. And that was a lot of fun. We had a blast on that. We went on that twice. And that's just, you know, a giant inner tube ride where you get drenched and you do get soaked. So it really is fun to have, you know, be sitting seated with the right people when you go on that. And it's a giant wheel. And you might notice that there's this plastic thing in the middle of this giant thing that you sit in. That's for your junk. You can put your stuff under this plastic thing so it doesn't get wet. Now, you will get wet. and you will get soaked. So if you're not wearing clothes that you don't mind getting soaked, and your pants are going to get soaked, everything's going to get soaked. And it was so funny because we were with this one family when we went on at the one time, and they were from England, and they were all like in their bathing suits. Like the guy had his shirt off, the kids didn't have any shoes on, you know, they were in their bathing, completely in their bathing suits and everything. But the mom was the funniest because she got hit with every single water gimmick that can hit you. Like there's a waterfall, there's a thing that spits water at you, like olive oil, like a statue spits water. There's, cannonballs that hit and water goes flying. And there's tons of these gimmicks all around the place. She got dumped on by every single gimmick that was there. There was not one thing. And there's this one part where you go up this ramp at the end. It's like a car wash. I mean, she even got hit with every sprinkler head. Not everyone, but she got hit. She was right under the sprinkler head. And they're kind of staggered. So you have to be just in the right places for some of these things. She got hit with every single one. And she was like, ah! Every time it was awesome. So that happened. And then there's this Dudley Do-Right's Ripsaw Falls Flume Ride. And that thing is a very long ride. And that was scaring the poop out of me as well. But I went on that. And that was in the middle day. So I wasn't really prepared for that. And there were a lot of very high parts. But I was very sad with myself. I wanted to go on it again, but Chisden, she doesn't like those rides. But I really wanted to go on it again because on the last shoot, I sort of put my head down and didn't really get to see the whole thing. And I was disappointed with myself, and I was ready to do that again. But unfortunately, Chiz didn't want to. But that was a lot of fun. If you like flume rides, I think that's probably one of the best ones I've ever been on just because of how long it is. And it has a very nice flume. And you know what? It's a very smooth one. It's not an incredibly steep drop. It's a very long drop, and it has like two segments, so you go very fast, but it's not the steepest incline I've been on. And then the last one is the Jurassic Park giant sploosh type of ride, where I remember the original Jurassic Park ride. I think, now, I could be completely mistaken and just making it up in my mind and confusing it with Jaws, but I think the original Jurassic Park ride, you went through like in like a Jeep or something, and it was terrible because, you know, animatrons weren't very convincing. So now they put it like as part of this flume ride. It's fine. But the end is a giant sploosh ride. So you're indoor and outdoor on a sploosh ride. So that's kind of cool. And that's one of these giant slabs that you sit on with like 20 people in a car. So enjoyed that. We did go on Jaws, but that one you really don't get wet on, at least not very wet, unless you happen to get splashed with something. And Jaws was very funny, but it was not as funny as the first time I went on the Jaws ride. Well, the very first time I went on Jaws was in the 1970s, and this was at the Universal Studios. Universal Hollywood Studios in Hollywood, California. And this is before there was a theme park, or probably even an inkling of a theme park to be attached to it. And at the time I went, they Jaws was not there because it was being used, I think, in Jaws 2. I could be mistaken on that, but I believe that's what it was. They were going to be filming that. So Bruce was gone, and instead our little tram, and this was when people really drove trams around. There was no railroad track that anything followed. And so our tram rider stopped, and then the Loch Ness Monster came up and blew water at us. How pathetic was that? But we did get to walk through the $6 million man freakout tunnel that you saw when he fought Bionic Bigfoot. So that happened, and then plus, like a person they used to have, you would go and you'd sit down, and they'd pretend that they're filming something, you know, and they'd show you what a live studio audience was like. And I remember the one segment was this lady got to go up and pretend she was lifting up this truck that was on a, you know, like a forklift or something. And, you know, it was a $6 million man soundstage. That's what that was supposed to be. Yeah, so I'm old. And, you know, Frankenstein would walk around and stuff like that. It was Universal Studios back then. So that was the first time I went on Jaws ride. Now the real Jaws ride at the Universal Studios, you have a performer, a person that does the same routine every single time. And he takes a little boat around, and the boat's on different hydraulics and gets lifted up. And you see Jaws, and then you go in here, and then Jaws blows up and giant fireballs and everything. It's a lot of fun. But the first time that they have to shoot a grenade gun at Jaws as one part of their routine. Now, let me tell you, they have auditions all the time for these amusement parks. And Chiz and I are seriously considering going down and auditioning for these things because we love the Florida weather. You know, I'm sure at some point after maybe 8 or 10 years, we might get sick of it. And I know that Florida definitely has some hurricanes and tornado-ish type of things that happen. I've lived through there because I used to have family down in Florida, but no longer do. Except my extended family, you, the listener. Thank you. So I know that, you know, there's bad seasons as well. But overall, it's a lot of fun. And I think we would enjoy that for a while. And then maybe we'll move to Washington State for a little while and get a little cold in us and that beautiful weather. Now, that's rainy all the time, too. But I really enjoy a lot of Seattle area and around there. I enjoy. Back to my story. The Jaws. The first time I went on Jaws at Universal Theme Park, it was great. Here's my imitation of the lady there.
Oh, no, it's...
Wait, what happened? I can't do impersonation unless there's reverb on my voice, so then you don't know it's not me.
Oh, no, here comes Jaws. Oh, no, I shoot him. Oh, no, Jaws again. I shoot again.
So she was great. My original Jaws guide. And we went on Twister. This is Bill Paxton. When I filmed Twister, so all day after we saw Twister, the Twister gimmick, Chiz and I were imitating, this is Bill Paxton for Simpsons. There I was on Simpsons. I don't know, we were a lot funnier then. I'm getting exhausted. From talking. I'm only hitting my 1 hour mark. So that wasn't all. That wasn't all. Let me tell you that when I originally got down to Orlando, we quick ran and paid the $15 for parking and everything right as the park was about to close. But we quick ran because we wanted to say we were newlyweds. And we thought if we take care of this now, then the next day when we go there in the morning, we'll have all of our get in the front of the line passes and our free Halloween Horror Nights passes and all these other perks that you get as a newlywed couple that we had heard about known about, and other people that have gotten these perks. I got shut down so hard that I felt like the biggest piece of turd poo in the world. I did not feel like, I felt like I was just this nothing and nobody. And I just felt like a nobody in Orlando. Like, I felt pretty good in Sanibel. That was great. I was treated very nice. But when we got to Orlando, I was just getting shut down one after another. And all different things I can't even remember and don't wish to remember because it really doesn't progress who I am. But I didn't get recognized at all, you know. And, you know, I'm not really that well known at all. But usually, it's very rare that if I'm around a wrestling event, even a big WWE show, which is just full of marks and people that have never heard of any of the shows I've ever been involved with. But even at a WWE show, I will usually get recognized by one or two people. I think like two's the limit. Because really, when you go to these things, who's there? People that surely would have never listened to anything I did. Usually that's the case. But I usually get recognized by at least one person, and you know, I wasn't looking to get recognized either. But it was just, I don't know, somehow everything was going along that I was really feeling like, hey, don't you know who I am? I'm nobody. That's exactly who I am. I've done nothing. I've had zero impact on this world or any of the people in it. And I don't know. You know, I was very down on myself. You know, I'm bipolar. So what do you want? It's bound to happen. Ups and downs. That's how it goes. And usually it's like, you know, I'll stick around for another 5 minutes. I'll be fine. You know, I'll be on my upside. But there was no upside happening. I was just really feeling like I failed. I couldn't get a blue. That's right. Chiz wanted to see Blue Man. I was hoping to get some type of discount because I had purchased all these tickets through, you know, AAA. And I was reading all these things about, oh, you could buy these bundle tickets with Blue Man. And so I was hoping to at least get, like, you know, $5 off. Hey, somebody throw me a bone here. And I talked to all these different people. I called a lot of different people and I got nothing. You know, I got nowhere, no how, no way. Even after other people have experienced the same type of perks. Oh, you know, that's all cool and that's all good, but didn't help my mood at all. But before we went down to Florida, I had texted D'Lo Brown because I had I met D'Lo at a Chikara event, and he said he liked all the product I produce. So I was like, oh, wow, really? He goes, yeah, I even listened to a Wiggly World. I was like, wow, Jesus. People here, and we were surrounded by Chikara guys. People here don't even listen to that or, you know of anything else that I do. And most of them probably don't even watch the Go-Go because they're bitter or something. I don't know. They, you know, hey, when you're doing it, who needs to watch, I guess. But a lot of people, no, that's really unfair. A lot of, you know, a lot of people enjoy it. They definitely enjoy what the Go-Go has done for the company. And if you don't know, if you're new to this show, I do sorry that you chose this show to listen to first, but I do other shows called We Talk Games. It's a monthly show that I do with a couple of my buddies, Kyle Von Kubik and Johnny Capcom and Eric Alex and Kirby's on there and Jaden and a lot of good people. Yellow Moth was on some early issues. Player Uno was on a few episodes, and we interview people. And let's not forget other people that are constantly our regulars on the show as well. Chizzy and Ralph, and I'm probably forgetting some other people, but and of course Stinky and TT. And so, and then we interview people from the video game industry and stuff like that. So I do We Talk Games monthly. I also do the Chikara Podcast of Go-Go, which is a video podcast about that features the Chikara Wrestling organization. And then I do this show. And I used to do a couple other shows as well. But they're sort of either on hiatus or I'm not involved with them anymore. So I produce a lot of media out of here, especially when we're dealing with video. But I talked to D'Lo, and he said that he liked some of my other product. And we only talked briefly, and I saw him again at another show. And I guess he had heard on my one episode that I was giving away my comics not too long ago. So he had texted me, and I hooked him up with I think maybe one or two boxes of comics. And so I still had his number. I knew he had lived there because I obviously sent the comics somewhere. So I just briefly mentioned, hey, we're coming down if you want to get together, you know, have a cup of coffee or whatever. And he ended up getting us in to see TNA because TNA happened to be filming at that time. And he's working as an agent there right now, and I think that's fantastic, and I love what he's bringing to the company. I hope he gets to continue that, because I like what's going on with TNA Wrestling now. And I don't think I've really gotten to talk about TNA Wrestling too much, and I don't think I will right now, but maybe in future episodes. But I've been enjoying it lately. And I'm very interested in what's going on there. And especially for Nigel McGuinness to go in there just out of the blue and have a feud with arguably the top guy in the company, at least in some people's perspective by some people's in some people's opinion. I think that's phenomenal and really shows. I love when people, you know, take these type of chances and go in these type of directions. This is what TNA should have been doing all along. They have nothing to lose, really, except, I guess, a contract on television. But, I mean, as far as competing against the Fed, you know, the sky's the limit with whatever direction they can go. And it looks like they're starting to go in different directions. And I really, really like that. Dixie Carter's speech was riveting. It was great. Opening a show and televising the things that she said, showing faces and heels sitting next to each other, you know, I'm a little mixed about that. I don't know how I feel, and who really cares how I feel about it anyway. But you know, I would have maybe a different medium of release for that, I think, would have been more appropriate. But hey, you know, she's committed. She says you're either with me or against me, and you know, you can't fault her for that. But I might have probably liked to seen that approached a different way, but you know, whatever. It's not my show. That's for damn sure. I don't got two dimes to rub together. And with inflation, you know, it's not nickels anymore, as the kids know. Yeah, I think I gotta take a break. I think I'm out of my mind. But D'Lo got us to some. We're gonna be VIPs or something, and I didn't know. He said, yeah, just show up and talk to somebody. You're good. I got you in. So we didn't know, are we sitting in the bleachers, or how does anything happen? And so we get to the park, and Chizzy and pro wrestling are not like oil and are not like water and oil. They're not like vinegar and oil. I don't know what they are like. They are like sometimes, you know, they work very well. I mean, she co-hosts sometimes Chikara Podcast at Go-Go. She loves going to Chikara. But towards wrestling, I think Chizzy is not bipolar. Towards pro wrestling, she's bipolar. I guess it all depends on the mood she's in that day as to whether she will love it or loathe it. And this day we had done the water rides in the morning. And we really didn't schedule our time appropriately. We were running a little late. And, you know, Chizzy was all, you know, water soaked, needed to do her hair, needed to do everything, wanted to look dressed to nines to go to TNA this night. And then we found out that, like, 10 minutes after we got into our hotel room that it had been moved up in time by an hour or a half hour, something like that, that we had to be standing in line. And you don't know the feeling inside of my hollow howl, the hollow feeling inside of me when I knew that I had to break this news to Chizzy that we only had like 20 minutes to get ready. And then once we got to the Universal Studios parking garage, we were going to have to sprint in order to get over, because they film TNA in one of the studios right on the lot there where they used to film, like, I don't know, Adam, whatever his name is, that gets slimed, and, you know, different little shows that were on Nickelodeon and stuff like that. Well, that's where they film the TNA. You've seen this before if you've ever watched TNA Wrestling. They mention that they're on the Universal Studios lot. So that's exactly what we did. We made it. We got ready. Everything was fine. Everything was good once we got there. We got there, and we didn't know what we were supposed to do because we didn't have any ticket. And nobody that I talked to knew about any list. I just said, hey, yeah, you know, we're supposed to be on a list. So they let us go with this. So one young lady that is normally on the VIP list. So we stood in line with her, and we were handed a ticket, and we come around, and somehow they, I don't know, stamp your hand, they do some type of thing, but we didn't have any type of piece of paper that showed, yeah, I'm supposed to get a hand stamp. So fortunately, the girl that we were with, that we were talking to, that as always goes there, she's allowed to have like five people on her VIP paper. So she did that, and I mean, I'm sure everything would have worked out if, but it would have been like a rigmarole. But anyway, we get, so we get in, we're standing in line, we're inside, it's all good, but we don't know, are we supposed to quick go up in the stands, or do we have our names on pieces of tape? So I looked around and I found it, and we were, I mean, dead center, front row. We were on the side of the hard camera so that, you know, you can't see us. But the other side of the hard camera, that's like you stand up there. So it was really great. It was amazing. I've never sat front row for anything pro wrestling except for, you know, indie shows where I show up early. So, I mean, this was amazing to me. This was great, and we had a great time, and all the matches were good, and it was a great impact, and it was only one taping. So that, I knew that was going to score me points with Chiz, because I don't think Chizzy could have sat through 4 hours of taping plus all the other, time that gets spent on staging different things and dark matches and whatnot. So I was very happy about that, and it was a great show. But of course, we didn't really get to talk to D-Lo. I wanted to just sit down and, you know, chew the gum with him. That doesn't, that's kind of, in fact, that made me a little sick of my sandals, because that's not what you say. Chew the fat, I guess you say, which is equally as disgusting. And seriously means I need to go get something to eat before I get on this interview. I have so much to talk about. I'm so happy about how things have turned out. It's just been non-freaking stop, especially with being sick and then having all the editing to do to get things in, together, and even how I'm going to present them. I had inklings of ideas of how the reception was going to go down, but let me tell you, I was ordering things to the day before the reception to make it all work. So I said, let's go out. So we go out, and we decide where we're going to go. And it's all fine, all cool. And I thought, you know, we'd sit down and, have a cup of coffee and a few drinks or whatever, salad. And when we got in there, a couple of the boys were there, like SoCal Val and a lot of other people. And Chizzy sat next to Taz. I sat next to Earl Hebner. And, it was great. Rocco was there, I think, and a lot of people, and it was just really, I wasn't expecting anybody else to really be there. And we got to talk to D'Lo a little bit, but it was a little bit loud, but it was a fun time. It was a great time, and definitely all that special treatment really made up for how crappy I was feeling up until that day. The Blue Man, they know Soul Me too. So Blue Man, of course, they don't talk afterwards when you meet them. And when but the band does talk, and I had a lot to talk about with them because they have a Chapman stick player in their group as well. And they sort of gave Trey the old cold shoulder. They were like, Trey, man. I was like, what the? Trey Gunn is like one of the nicest people I ever met. So that was also adding into my feeling of pooposity. And also knowing that the success and the explosion of the Blue Man Group is entirely within my range of talent, creativity, and ability to express my creativity, and things that I've eclipsed some of those things with Trapdoor, with what I was given at various shows, you know, way before we had video cameras and stuff like that to be able to record some of these goodies. Of course, I had my jealous bitterness there, but it wasn't too bad. But I mean, it's all added to my inadequate perception of myself. So this VIP treatment was just amazing. It was great, and it's honest truth that Earl Hebner did try to sell me his half eaten salad for $2 or $3, and I was thinking, are you? And I did say, you rascal, you? And in my mind, I was thinking, you're gonna try to sell me the salad out in the parking lot, because if you remember the rumors of him getting let go from WWE, him and his brother, because of selling merch or something that they weren't allowed to. And I'd already always envisioned them as one of these. If you ever go to a WWE event, you'll be barraged by your car will be barraged as you're exiting the parking lot by instead of by bums trying to wash your windshield with a dirty rag, you will be barraged by people with their own brand of WWE t-shirts. Now, buy this triple H-E-H-E t-shirt, you know, so I always had an envision of Earl out there in the parking lot, and now he's trying to sell me a salad for $2. He's eaten most of it. He's a very jovial fella and very, very alive, no doubt about that. So that was kind of cool. That was nice. Definitely more than we expected, and a big thanks to go out to D'Lo for that. And D'Lo also suggested that I watch a couple shows because he was a big fan of Battlestar as well. And I said, great, when I get back, I'm going to cut this A Wiggly World about the end of the revisiting the final episode, the show finale of Battlestar Galactica. But of course, I didn't get to watch that yet. But this morning when I was eating breakfast, I did get to watch Flashback, which he had recommended to me. He also recommended Lost. Lost, to me, I don't know. It seems like it's going to be too slow paced for me. And I was never very big for people stuck on an island. That's why I never watched that Survivor and stuff like that. But, you know, I trust people. People are attached to the show. And I will watch it from the beginning one day. But I'm just not ready for that yet. But I did start to watch this Flashback. And I have all the episodes that are available now. And I'm starting at episode one. And initially, I made it through the first episode. I'm glad I did. Pleased with it. You know, only by the first episode. Pleased with it, and glad I made it through. I only made it through because it was recommended to me. I don't know if I would have made it through if I was just watching this on television, because one of the first things you're treated to is the old Chips highway chase where. A truck's driving one way down the road. These FBI agents are chasing this truck. It's driving one way down the road. They're going in opposing traffic. And the truck coming the other way, you know, goes up a ramp and flies through the air and does, you know, 18 flips and a cartwheel and a handspring and a walkover. So, and then, of course, they show the front of the truck that it did this cartwheel over, and, you know, zero, not even the headlight is scratched. So I was a little off-put by this very real filming feeling. I mean, it's filmed in it. It's filmed very well. I really like this the treatment that is done to this footage, the post work. I love the atmosphere of it. And nothing bothers me. You know, it's not like the shaky camera. It's not like the... And they did that shaky camera in Battlestar, but it never really bothered me that much. I think they did the shaky camera in Bionic Woman. Not the Bionic Woman, of course, which was pre-shaky camera. And, you know, it bothered me in that, in Bionic Woman, definitely. That was the only thing that bothered me about Bionic Woman, I think. I really love the film, so I liked everything about it. It sounds great. Some of the acting... subpar, other acting very good, and I like the casting. I think Omar or Kumar or Homer or whatever, Alexander and Kumar go to White Castle. One of those guys is in it. That's good to see him. I like him. He's very good in it. But some of the, like the boss, you know, I'm not feeling him. So the acting's a mixed bag. The dialogue is pretty good. You know, for the first episode, it's okay. It's better than what I expect out of television, so that's always nice. That's always a plus. But the opening unreality thrown in there, you know, those type of things are things that bother me and really ruin it for me. But let me tell you, by the end, I really forgot about it, and I really like it. I like what things people have said that they thought they experienced. And I got to tell you, I've seen 6 episodes into the future, and I'm going to still be watching it by then. So that's good. So Flashback. And I also watched 2 movies, but I got to go now, and I'll be right back for you. No Time Will Pass. I have to do a little interview for We Talk Games, and I'm gonna try to get out the next We Talk Games by Tuesday. I should have all day Tuesday to work on it, as long as another disaster does not occur as it has this past week. And I have a lot of Chikara stuff to get done as well. I really got behind on everything. I mean, I would not trade my vacation for the world. None of it. I would definitely trade leading up to the vacation, getting everything prepared for my extended leave, and my return from vacation. I would trade both of those for anything in my past life, I think, just about. Stay tuned. All right, well, I just saw that Chikara was mentioned in Philadelphia City Paper alongside of Ring of Honor and Combat Zone Wrestling quotes, and a little bit of Dragon Gate, I think, was in there as well. I didn't read the whole article. It's quite long, quite extensive, and puts a little bit of the bashing on the Big Fed there. Even a little dig at TNA, but... Hey, man, I think TNA's doing okay now. They're doing all right. They're back in good graces in my book, and I'm happy for that because I was excited when they got the television deal to begin with. And then they blew into it, and then, you know. But right now, just to take a brief wrestling break because of that article there, I think the WWE is, and their celebrity guest hosts, is really coming off, I don't know the exact word for it. I mean, it's not lowbrow, it's not anything like that, and definitely the talent, some of the WWE talent is still, you know, fantastic and great guys. But I think with the celebrity thing, especially with the Aussie host, I just thought, this is like romper room. This is like very juvenile, incredibly, incredibly juvenile. But I think the workers are trying to do the best they can with it. There's one sloppy diva match where it was like a sloppy royale or something, and I was just like, if somehow that match could be converted to oral sex, that person would be sitting on a gold mine because it was sloppy. Now I have to put mature on this. Moniker angle here, this show. No, but seriously, folks, yeah, so that worked out well. And of course, in the little break here to try to clear my mind a bit between jumping back behind a mic, I think I'm almost finished cleaning off my one AT15 speaker. And let me just make a suggestion to anyone thinking about re-foaming or reconing or re-anythinging there. Outside of dropping a glob of Elmer's glue all on a speaker that you may have put your something sharp through accidentally, I mean, that's fine. If you want to re-foam these, that is a messy, messy, messy job. You are going to get very glue-ridden, and the foam is going to break into a gazillion pieces. Thankfully, I saved the box that I received this this reconing kit, re-foaming kit in, I should say, and all my pieces are going in there. But the ground is a mess. You need to really set aside a big space, and each speaker is going to take a long time to clean up. This does not come off easy, so you have to weigh the balance. Yeah, it only costs $30 instead of buying a new, you know, $500, $1,000 set of speakers, but you have to figure out if that's worth it or not to get that guppy. And it's very delicate work too, because I mean, you don't want to ruin your paper speaker, you know. But you have to use a utility knife and about a whole bottle of isopropyl alcohol, and you will go through, you know, paper towels or rags galore trying to get that done. And speaking about refoaming, when we got back from our wedding, then we had the wedding reception. Because our wedding, we were all by ourselves. Just me and Chiz went down Florida, got hitched, the beach, me, Chizzy, lady marrying us. But then when we got back, we had our wedding reception on the November 7th. And I had to try to get everything together for the wedding reception because I was going to show the video of our wedding. So I had to edit all that. I had to, you know, grab all the stuff. Anything that had to be synced had to be synced. The actual wedding footage itself needed 10 layers of filters, 5 layers per camera, because we moved the wedding to 3 p.m., there was such a backlight. And one thing that my cameras don't do well is backlight. Even when you hit the backlight button, nothing really changes. So the sun was in such a way, and I wanted to shoot us as with the backdrop of the ocean. I didn't want to shoot us with the backdrop of, you know, a condo or something, or a hotel. So I had to shoot it in this one particular way. And what that did was I had to try to balance the exposure so that everything was sort of 50-50. And then when I got back home here in post, I had to first edit it the way I wanted to, and then create 4 other duplicates of each version of the camera, the close-up and the long shot, and then apply different filters to each one of the 5 layers, and then add or multiply or hard light the above versions of, if anyone knows about non-linear editing, let's just say that it took an entire day just to do the, whatever, 10-minute wedding ceremony. It took the entire day to render that out because it was such a complex layering and filters, and in order for you to be able to see the ocean and still see us somewhat lit. Because the alternative was either we would be totally silhouetted and you could see the ocean, or you'd be able to see us and the background was completely white. We might have well been standing in front of a white wall. So that was just, and that's only one element of the entire wedding. But, you know, I filmed parts of the trip, and then we were going to do a voiceover, and I had a special thing planned for the end. And what I originally wanted to do in the end was that we would walk through the screen. But in my preliminary test, which happened like 2 days before the ceremony, I hung up this one sheet pack that I bought to project this on, and the projector was a whole nother thing. I had to buy a new mixing board for this. I went in incredible debt for this ceremony here. But you know what? I had to get what I needed to make this come off. I also bought a microphone pack. Thankfully, and each one of these purchases was an incredible adventure. Like, I of course looked for the least expensive thing that was still going to be able to work and deliver. And that's sort of how I stock my studio. That's how I've always been. I've always had I have a lot of expensive equipment, electronic equipment, but I always try to budget the least expensive way that I possibly can to still deliver a quality project, and the same went for this. I bought the microphones as a package deal. They're not top of the line mics, but they were wireless and they came in their own metal case. And I got them on the Three Easy Payment plan through American Musical Supply, which I love to use because they allow for the Three Easy Payments. The mixing board I went dead for. That's just a small one. I needed that anyway to run the Chikara shows because my former bass player finally took all his equipment that I've been, you know, borrowing for the last 15 years. He finally took that back. So I needed that, and it's a perfect board. It's just like the board I have here in my home studio, except it's a lot less tracks and a lot less money. But the same quality Yamaha board. I'm very impressed with it. If you're interested, yeah, in a small board, I recommend this Yamaha MG-12-4. It is, you know, 124, but the reason it's called 124 is because it's a 12-4 CX. I got the one with the effects built in because we were going to do a little karaoke. And really, no one knew that was going to happen, and I didn't know if it was going to work. No one knew. I didn't really know how the night was going to go. I've had things in mind. I knew I wanted to show the film, and I knew I wanted to somehow to be revealed. But because we couldn't, I could not slice my sheets, or else it would be, have big giant gaps and look terrible. And so we couldn't walk through the screen. So we did some other things. If you haven't seen the video, I'll get it up there, and you can understand. And I needed a projector, and a projector, oh, what a nightmare with that. But it came from China, because, you know, this was all I could, it was already out of my budget, but this was the best thing I settled for, and boy, did I get burned. But I was somehow able to figure a way around it, because listen to this. I wanted HDMI, because I knew I was going to show this in 16:9, and the clearest quality would be great. If I could somehow afford a projector that could do 16:9 and, you know, accept an HDMI input, that would be fantastic. Well, I found one that was well under $400, but it wasn't the $100 toy that I would have bought instead if I would have known what I was getting here. It turned out to be, a projector from China. And it's pretty huge. I thought it would be, you know, smaller, like anything more modern. But it had HDMI inputs, it had composite inputs, and it had a SCART input. So you think you have all these high-def inputs, and it can do, it says it can do, you know, HDMI and everything else, so higher resolutions. Anything that you put in, HDMI or any other of the high-def inputs, only projects at 4:3. The 16:9 is only for standard AV input. Who has like a high def television? It's only a 4:3 aspect ratio. You know, it's like it's got a rounded tube. Tube, yeah. Blah, blah, blah. I'm losing it today. Well, my friends, that's about it. No, so that was the, it's so much, and I don't feel like boring you with it, but let's just say it was an adventure. Every single one of these gimmicks that ended up putting me in the hole was almost completely untested. I mean, I was testing the morning of. I was still burning the DVDs the day of our reception. We had just, we did the voiceovers for it the night right before the reception, and that was even shaky because it was starting to get late. It was like 10 p.m., and Chiz goes to bed quite early, and it was 10 p.m., and I was still like rendering one part just so that we could start doing the voiceovers. So it was all skin of the teeth stuff. But it all worked out, and I'm very happy. Everything worked. And then the next day, and you know what I always say, it's not a party unless someone gets arrested and goes to jail. And Kyle almost ended up in a pokey. He had a little. Kyle came down, my partner in We Talk Games, and his lovely GF, Kim, came as well. And Kim wrote in a couple things for the show. This is going, you know, we're 114 episodes in, so this was kind of long ago, probably in the early double digits. Let me borrow some great things, and really, really indebted to her turning me on to some stuff. And then I don't even want to talk about that, but it was sort of like, welcome to Pennsyltucky, Kyle. You know, some type of brush with the vehicles. They kissed a little bit, and you know, the boyfriend goes to the trunk. And then starts getting all loud and like a dick. So anyway, the cops show up and it's a whole affair. But thankfully, no one went to prison. Everything was okay. No citations, no nothing. And everything worked out all right. But that's always, you know, disheartening to call your buddy right after your reception and like he's ready to go to the hospital because he got his heart pounding out of his chest. Cops! Good cop, bad cop. And then we went out to breakfast with them the next day at Sibs, and that was cool. And then they came out, they hung out at the chicken coop. And I wanted to cut some stuff. In fact, I wanted to have them on a Wiggly World. Thought that would be really cool since I've never had a guest on a Wiggly World. But you know what? And we were even thinking about kicking around, like doing his little part of We Talk Games from here in the chicken coop. And I think that would be cool. But you know what? We came here and we just hung out. You know, we hung out, we chit-chatted. Chiz was talking to Kim. We were all talking to each other. We were at the bar a little bit and at my my desk here in my studio. And it was just a nice time. So I just liked relaxing because I had a big, I had a really crash course to try to get that Monday's Chikara podcast go out. And that was a reception. It was a great time. Oh, a lot of great people showed up. Jess and Yolanda and Wiggly Cito, Wiggly Cito's brother. Mike Quackenbush was there and his lovely wife, and Vin Gerard was there for some reason. These, you know, it was hard to know who I should invite for Chikara. And what I did was I invited people that I worked with separately, worked with on projects, worked with a lot. And April, who is intimate with Leonard F. Chikarason, made our cake. And I always see, you know, I do a lot of work with Leonard at the film shoots and stuff like this for the different promos and stuff. And he's always treated me well. Now, I never voted for him to be the Chikara commissioner, but he's always treated me well. And I love April as well. And so I thought, why come all this way? Please stay. I like you guys, you know, so they were a part of it as well. Who else? Some people from Trapdoor. Now, my bass player couldn't make it because he hit his foot with an axe. My current bass player, but my current drummer was there. And Mystic T was there. Pyramido was there. So it was kind of neat. It was really cool. Those were my family. Outside of my mom, that was my entire family that showed up. And also the Millers. Diane Miller was a guitarist for Cabbage Go-Go and Epicurean, so I've known her forever, and her sisters are fantastic. I love the Miller sisters. If I could marry all three Miller sisters, that's what I would have done a long time ago. But unfortunately, they are three separate people, and they weren't too hip on that. I had a great time, and we got to do the thank you cards, lots of really neat things, some heartfelt things, some homemade things, some things that, you know, we truly didn't expect. And I just have to, I don't want to do this because I don't want to specify, and everyone's gift was amazing. You know, cash is great. That's exactly what we need because we're going to try to somehow save for a house, because I got to tell you, living in a chicken coop, you know, when your bathroom and your sink is not in the same household that you live in, that's kind of a little bit of an inconvenience. So, we're going to try to build or move somewhere or do something. So we really needed that cash. But Yolanda did something that I have to mention only because it's sort of like, you know, you get a lot of Christmas gifts, but rarely would you expect something from just like a friend that was so like something we would do for ourselves if we were given like a blank check to just go and make things happen. And Yolanda did like little shopping for us, and that was really neat. She got Chiz some Sephora stuff and a Sephora gift certificate in her own little bag. And she got me a bag that had Tekken 6 in it for the PlayStation 3. And I'm like, you know, that's really cool. You know, it's great. But we got some things that were Julie Miller. She made us a painting. And she's the one that paints the ravens that I mentioned the last time. You might think she was goth. I mentioned it on We Talk Game Show. So she made us a painting. Diane made us like a stained glass. So we got lots of different neat little gifts, lots of gift certificates and things. Fantastic, great, awesome, cool. Jess got us, you know, to Wegmans. We go there all the time, so it's perfect. Wiggly Cito, I can't believe it. Thank you. You know, you did not have to do that. You got us two gift cards that really... Buddy, I know what you do for a living, so thank you. And thanks for both of you two wearing your button-down shirts. I know that you probably got a scolding from one of your parents or something about making sure you wore a button-down shirt to this event. So thank you. And Kyle and Kim were dressed to the nines. Everybody was dressed very well, so that was really something. And it's a blur to me because I was really trying to entertain everybody, too, while, you know, it was supposed to be our shindig. But hopefully everyone had a good time, and that was the reception. Now, I saw two movies recently. Gamer, if you don't know, is about playing a video game. And you control people. So this has a couple things going for it. And more going against it. Number one, it's called Gamer. And it has something to do with video games. So right away, you are thinking in your mind, most likely, a poop movie. Unless it's in some fashion of a documentary form movie, and we go into this at great lengths, talking about the video game movies, the evolution of video game movies, and a new really great and moving video game movies within the past 5 years, like Tilt, the Battle to Save Pinball, and of course King of Kong is the huge one. If you haven't seen King of Kong yet, this movie is for anybody. There's nobody, I don't think there's anybody that will hate King of Kong. And it's best to see King of Kong with someone that you're keen on. If you're keen on someone in that special way, that special winking way, I suggest that you see this movie with them. Now, if you're not already going out with them and you see this movie with them, well, it may spark some happenings there. Because many times when you see people of opposite type of builds, opposite types of nomenclature. No. Any type of, you would say, how is that person with that person or something like that? Chances are that they may have met when they were either doing something physical near one another, experiencing something physical, or experiencing something emotional. Happy, sad, anything. Any type of emotion, any type of shared, more better towards the happy things that you will become attached to this person than it would be for the sad things, because then once those sad things get better, it's sort of like that old thing, that old adage that misery loves company. Yeah, misery loves company until someone's feeling better, and then they don't like to be around someone miserable all the time to commiserate with. But oftentimes you will transfer those emotions to the people you're with. So this is not any type of mesmerism or anything like that, but I do recommend if you want a good movie to see with someone that you're fond of, to see that with them. Or if you want a good cry by yourself, or some type of, I don't know if you're really going to cry, but you may cry at a few points in this movie. I really recommend King of Kong. It's a very, very touching story. Never mind the subject matter. It has nothing to do with the quality of this title. We talked to many of the people that are in this movie. We've had on our show, on our We Talk Game show twice, we've had Walter Day on, and we've had Billy Mitchell on as well. And we've also talked about these video game movies. But this Gamer is not in the style of a documentary style. This is an action movie. Number one, it's an action movie. So you got that to deal with, okay? And it's supposed to be a cool action movie. So you have that you have to, deal with. Now, this film style that this movie is done in, I'm not so crazy about. It's sort of like that chop frame to communicate action, where it looks like it's coming to you at about 15 frames per second. I don't know really what's going on. I don't really know what type of treatment that this film is given. But I'm never one for that. I it's one step above the MTV posterization and one frame every, 3 seconds type of filters happening. Early video effects. So right away we have that happening, and that's supposed to be happening when you're in-game. Now, I will say for this movie that I was kind of surprised that it actually didn't suck the biggest balls known to mankind. It wasn't that bad. It had a lot. The movie had a lot of baggage going in, and those are, like I said, an action movie, and based on video games, or a video game, or some type of video game concept. But what they tried to do with this, now, I don't know, is this, here's my question, and I would like to pose this to the panel, but of course the international, the We Talk Games International Video Game Council of Millionaires is not available at this time, so I will pose this to you, my counsel in your ear holes. Is Gamer the 2009 video game modern answer to Blade Runner? The answer is no, it is not. But I think, and I could be incredibly wrong, that it is not on the cusp of almost being a Blade Runner. I think it is going up the far side of the hill towards that precipice that would lead it to almost being a Blade Runner. Now, going back and watching Blade Runner now, some kids may say, Jesus, who wants to sit watching a cityscape, you know, expose itself for 15 minutes or 20 minutes? You know, a lot of the... Blade Runner's a great movie, in my opinion. You know, very dark, really conveys mood well. The question is, do people still want to sit through that mood? And I don't think it appeals to everyone. I love where it goes. I love the dialogue. I love a lot of things about Blade Runner. But I'm not sure that it's for everybody. And I think that this movie here almost gets to, in parts, it just misses conveying something very deep. And it might be because of the actors in it, and it might be in part due to some of the writing. You know, I don't really know what it is, but this game is not the giant steaming pile of poo that you might think by thinking of an action-based video game movie. It actually does pretty well with what it has, and it surprises you a little bit in parts. Other parts, of course, just incredibly, you know, over-the-top action movie, which... If you're trying to go for reality and you're trying to play for the truth, then I think those parts should have been taken out of there, and maybe it would have come across like some type of compelling drama. But I don't really want to dwell on this too much. The neat parts in it, Dexter is the heavy in this, so that's cool. He's the mastermind behind a real life The Sims, a real life Second Life, where you are in neurological control of real people that volunteer, or in the case of the hunter aspect of this, that's the main focus of this gamer. I can't recall exactly what they called the first-person shooter type of segment. Those are prisoners that are in there, and you get your sentence shortened. And you get released right away, actually, if you can make it survive 30 rounds of this game. And people can play it. And the views of the future are kind of cool. The room that you go into, and it's nothing but all video screens that are just floating in air, and you can interact with them. I like all that. I like it. There are a lot of elements about this movie to latch onto and to like. A lot of stinky parts of this movie as well. So that was Gamer. G.I. Joe. Here we go. G.I. Joe. Yo, Joe! Now, I was a very big fan of course, the 1960s G.I. Joe, the 12-inch guys and stuff like that, 10-inch, 12-inch, depending. And, of course, 8-inch Mego, Spider-Mans, and Conans later in Superman, the DC heroes, the Marvel heroes, all that. And then in the 80s, I was working in a toy department in at Kmart, the Big K, as it's called now. And there, I started collecting the smaller 3.5-inch or whatever they are, as soon as they came out, I was on board, and I bought things like the battleship and the, you know, I had one of every helicopter, one of every jet. I had a few tanks. I had tons of the Cobra grunts and things like that, so I could really stage these wars. You know, I would set them up, and then you look at them. You know, I really wouldn't go pew, pew, and you know, I had a special room that I in a cubbyhole that I put carpets all around, and I would just set these up, sort of like people did HO scale trains and stuff like that. I like to set up these little G.I. Joe action figures. So I was a big fan of those up until, I don't know, for quite a few many years as I worked in retail. I remember the space shuttle. I wasn't able to get that. Every year, Hasbro would come out with one giant $100 toy. And like one time it was a Terradrome. I got that. I got the Battleship. Now, I don't think the Terradrome was $100, but that was it was still pricey. It was over 50, I think. And then they came out with the space shuttle. I missed that year. I really wanted that, but I just didn't have the loot. And like the battle stations, all this. Well, anyway, G.I. Joe was very good as a toy line. G.I. Joe, to me, was great as a comic. When the Marvel comic came out, I loved that comic. And a lot of people like the Transformer comic and things like that, too. But I wasn't so hip on the Transformer. It was okay. It was good. But when this movie came out, this new one, when I heard about a live-action movie, of course, everyone was groaning a bit. Some people were looking forward to it. I, of course, was not. I could wait for it to come out on the DVD, the Blu-ray, and stuff like that. And the Magic Antenna Machine. And I tuned it in. And I know a lot of people were crying about this movie and how awful it was. But most of these people that, I guess, would appeal to would be the people that are most used to G.I. Joe as a cartoon. Because pretty much, and they might have had the toys as well, but the toys sort of have fizzled out. I mean, Hasbro's, I don't even know if they're around, or I know that, you know, they might have been bought out by other things, and I know there's still G.I. Joe's in the stores, but they're really not as hot as they used to be at one time. So a lot of people complain about this. I think, well, maybe, you know, they like the cartoon. And I got to tell you, the cartoon, in my opinion, pretty much stunk. It pretty much was pretty lousy. I mean, the only thing the cartoon really had to go for, I mean, it didn't have that great art. Well, number one, it did have a great animation opening. Now, many times, if you don't know, an outside studio special time will be given to the opening animation of a cartoon. And this is true with cartoon series of even today. They'll even do it at, you know, much higher frame rates and everything else. They'll go the full 24 frames per second and everything else to make the opening animation really, really grab you. They'll do all different types of, you know, camera angles, spin around 360 degrees. They'll do CG integrated with it. And the opening of G.I. Joe wasn't a letdown either. It was very, very good. And its theme song was, it's kind of humorous to try to sing it to yourself now in a deep baritone voice. The fight for freedom, wherever there's trouble, G.I. Joe is there. G.I. Joe! You know, and they go all crazy like that. So it's kind of humorous and funny, but you could get right into it. And the only other things really it had going for it, Cobra Commander's voice, and of course Roadblock's voice, which was Scatman Crothers. But outside of that, it wasn't that good. You know, it wasn't that good. I mean, Baroness wasn't that sexy. Some of the guys looked goofy. And it was just, of course, a half-hour commercial for their toy line. Where G.I. Joe was really, really great was in the comic books. And if you can get a hold of some of those older Marvel comics, you'll be surprised. I think any issue of that, I think that you pick up and you read, you'll see, wow, these characters are actually developed and they mean something. And they did a very good job with that. I think there might have been, you know, a few issues that were kind of poop. But for the most part, it was a very, very good series. I don't recall, I owned all the Eagle comic series, or whatever the UK versions of these G.I. Joe series were. I mean, I owned the entire run up until I stopped collecting it, but I don't really recall if that was that good or not. I think it was okay, but definitely the American Marvel Comics was very good. And I gotta say, out of everything I've seen and played and done with these, I mean, I remember the original G.I. Joe and the original G.I. Joe commercials. When The Intruder came out, I was getting a little too old for dolls at that time. The intruder is the enemy of G.I. Joe. And I think it went into that G.I. Joe bit, the business there. I'm going to have to look up, I'm going to have to do a YouTube for the, wait, was it the intruder or the invader? All I know is he came in a flying saucer, and he was a caveman. That's caveman in a flying saucer. Can't even rub two stones together, and yet he can fly a flying saucer. So you imagine that. It was the intruder or the invader. I don't recall. But I remember from back then, and the comic back then was sort of like, here's G.I. Joe. He's got a beard. He's an old guy with a beard, and he got a cut face. And not only that, but a guy that looks almost like him, except with different color hair, has the same cut. These guys are just doing that to themselves, okay? They're weird. And it was sort of like the Cub Scouts or Boy Scouts of America or something. And that's what the comics were like back then that I remember. And mostly you got it inside of a, you know, an action play set or something like that. You got a little strip. It wasn't very much that I can recall. And I also remember Jim Powers, the Atomic Man. And he was like a knockoff of the $6 Million Man. I have a doll of him, a figure of him now. But I got it later in life off the eBay. Not in bad shape. But he, like, you put this blade in his hand, and then you spun this knob in his forearm, and it was supposed to be like his helicopter he could get around on. And it was just weird. Because I think he voluntarily had his legs cut off to do this. It's a blur to me. But I had his action playset, which was kind of cool when I was young. And that was right when I was like on the cusp of having to get out of toys until I could be an older teen and it would be cool again. When you're, you know, like 18, closer to 20 or 16, I think maybe even 16, you might start thinking, oh, it's cool to have them on my shelf. So in the grand scheme of things, I would put this movie as being better than the animations. First of all, and maybe a lot of people are mad at me now, but come back to your earbuds and listen to why I'm saying this. First of all, think of G.I. Joe. It's impossible. If you want to feature every single gimmick and crazy contraption that they drive around in, that they walk around in, that they fly around in, that they do anything, it is an incredible task to try to emulate that in a movie and still be taken seriously, number one. And they tried to go for a pseudo-serious type of movie with this. The acting was pretty good. I liked most. You know what? I mean, this could... Think about it. They could have said, John Cena as Duke. Miley Cyrus as Scarlet. They really could have blown this, but they didn't. They did very good in casting this movie. And Baroness is hot, hotter than any time, any drawing, any other representation of the Baroness I've ever seen. And they tried to work a little story in there, and I think it's okay. Definitely someone a little too inspired by The Fifth Element got a hold of Cobra Commander there, I think. And speaking of Fifth Element, I had the biggest guffaw the other day. I actually guffawed myself because I realized what The Fifth Element was referring to. And I know it's silly to think, well, it's The Fifth Element. And, you know, they explain what it's supposed to be, this lady. I just ruined it. Sorry. Spoiler alert. But, you know, I mean, I know what they talk about in a movie and everything, but then I just realized that, oh, wait a minute, Earth, Wind, and Fire and the Void, those are the four elements, and then the fifth element. Well, I think the elemental periodic table's up to like 140-some elements by now, so I'm sorry, you should have called this the 144th element or something. So that I got a guffaw out of that. I don't know why. And now number three, the G.I. Joe. Yes. So they're trying to do all these things. You would have needed like another 10 years to have this look convincing, because the CG technology just doesn't exist yet for how ambitious this film was. It was incredibly, it was too ambitious for its own good. And instead of concentrating on the story, which they had a pretty good story here, you know, boy meets girl, boy loses girl, girl tries to kill boy, boy tries to kill girl, 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 boy, girl, girl, boy, girl. Everything happens, and then you get Zartan. You know, they had strong enough characters, they had strong enough everything to not have it rely entirely on effects, and yet they tried to recreate, you know, all these anti-gravity devices and giant robots that you walk in and everything else. So, unfortunately, you know, it was just far too ambitious. But and some parts are comical, especially all the underwater fighting that happens with ships zooming around, and then like people are going down an elevator, and one level of the elevator looks pretty convincing. Then you go, it goes down to another. It's like, oh, look, here's the elevator. We have giant screens of silicon graphic rendered people trying to fight one another. And it just looks very out of place. Another thing that bothered me was, well, first of all, let me back up. I've always been confused by the Duke Hawk Flint thing. The ages, the ranks, I really never got it. I never knew who was whose boss or why. And it used to bother me that they would bring out some of these characters, they would introduce these characters as sort of a yearly top dog they were trying out. So, but it's never been as bad as, like, say, the X-Men movies. X-Men movies, you have Iceman, who was a part of the original X-Men, and now he's the same age as the teenagers in the new X-Men. He's the same age as Kitty Pryde and Rogue, Iceman. Ice Boy, I guess he would be called. So that when Hollywood gets a hold of these things, that's what usually happens. And I'm not sure if that happened in this G.I. Joe, because I really never understood it. Anyway, so the person that they have playing Duke or Hawk, whichever one the character was, and that's another thing, Duke and Hawk, I get mixed up. Because I think they're supposed to be the same person. Like they're the same John Wayne or something, I don't know. So that was a little troublesome, but not very much. And, you know, we also saw no village people drop out gung-ho in this movie. And Hasbro also stayed away from their controversial stereotypes. We didn't see Spirit, Airborne, or who was the last one that they tried to tone down? Dart, I think they called him. long braided black hair, because they got a big deep poop for Iron Knife, I think that was his name, Spirit, when they first released him. To me it was fine, I guess, because that's the age I grew up in, but by that time in the 80s, of course, that was like, hey, you know, it's kind of just incredibly stereotypical. And then when Dart came out, he just had like a tribal tattoo, I guess. And I was sort of out of it by then, but I had read about it. So we didn't see some of those characters. But without a doubt, the coolest two characters to come out of G.I. Joe has to be, not Firefly, because he used to be one of my favorite characters. And I heard his voice on a cartoon. Maybe that's why I don't like the cartoon. Because I heard his voice, I'm like, I'm Firefly, And I thought he was like this ninja guy, really cool. And he's like, hey, I'm going to start a fire. But two of the coolest guys have got to be Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow. So, you know, we're doing G.I. Joe, okay? We're doing it as a movie, more in tune with real life. And you know how they like to redress people. Well, you really can't get... I mean, how can you make a dumb looking Snake Eyes? Well, they did it, because they just like took a 1930s plastic false face and spray painted it black, so he's got like formed lips and cheekbones and everything. Instead of like a cool ninja mask of some type or a cool visor, he's got this prefabricated plastic polyfoam. I don't know what it was, but it had built-in lips and stuff. It was really goofy. The kung fu was great. The backstory, I enjoyed, no problem. But let me ask you this. You're going to keep a traditional ninja-y looking guy, except instead of black, he's wearing all white. How do you screw this up, Hollywood? Because that's the costume. It's not, you know, it's already goofy enough that it's white. So that should satisfy the necessity for Hollywood to screw things up. Okay, you're going to keep it white. Why don't we give him like a smoking jacket with tails? A ninja with tails on a jacket he's wearing. And his ninja gi and his ninja outfit. So, unfortunately, it's not that great. But I got to tell you, once again, not the biggest poo ball in the barrel. And much better than the G.I. Joe video games of the movie. So, if you're a fan of G.I. Joe, I got to tell you, I put it above the movies. Above the cartoons. So, maybe you might like it if you like the cartoons. And maybe I have to re-see the cartoons to see if I really do care about them or not. Or if my memory of them serves me correctly. Now, friends, I'd love to say, for another 3 or 4 hours. But unfortunately, my brain bucket is not able to communicate all these thoughts that are in my head. But I must leave you with something coming towards what I've been studying recently, what I've really been getting into, what the bulk, the main chaw of A Wiggly World usually is. We will, of course, be talking more about the Judeo-Christian and, of course, by its cousin Muslim, because they're all based on old Mosaic desert gods. And I will be talking about that more in coming episodes of A Wiggly World, especially I will be exploring... you've heard me say it before, that I have yet to see proof of an historical Jesus outside of Christology. Christology, you know, I could find no record of this fella outside of the Christology. I've done a full episode on A Wiggly World, going over all the irrefutable evidence of non-secular and Judaic and non-Christian sources that talk about this Jesus. But the truth is that all arguments presented to defend the existence of a historical Jesus either talk about people that worship someone named Jesus or that there were people called Christians 60 to 100 to 200 years after Jesus was supposed to have, you know, flown up to heaven and been received by a cloud. And Jesus loved the clouds, no doubt about it. In fact, he likes to come back with the clouds and a whole lot of angels and everything else. But I digress. I don't want to talk about that. You can read that for yourself. Acts 1:9, Mark 13:24-7, Matt 24:30, Revelations 1:7. Just off the top of my head, I would Google Jesus cloud, and you probably get a whole lot more. But, I mean, not only that, but you can't find any writings about many of the occurrences in the Bible, such things as, you know, Herod killing the infants. These are things that people would have written about. Also, you know, the census that made Joseph have to go to Bethlehem to take the census. Whoever heard of that? You live somewhere else. Hey, you know what? You got to travel all this way back because we're going to have a census over here. And I know you don't live here anymore. You haven't lived here for years. But you got to come back and take the census. There's no record of these censuses. In fact, you know, some apologists have tried to draw these. What I'm doing now is I'm doing deep sea fishing with a giant pole and trying to make these connections happen, as many of the apologists must be as well. But friends, I want to leave you with a little question. A little question I ask of all my friends. please tell me in the Bible where it says that the devil is the ruler of the fiery hell, and this is the hell that people will go and live eternally there with their eternal souls. People have eternal souls. People live in heaven after they die as well. They go up to heaven and they live around. They float there in clouds and things like this. The rapture, the Trinity. Please point these out to me in the Bible. Where do they appeal in the Bible, my friends? Nowhere. That's exactly right. These are not things that are biblical. Going to hell, if you're bad, it's not in the Bible. No matter what Jack Chick tells you and his lovely satanic comics and everything else. And by the way, Satan just means adversary. There is no devil with horns and a pitchfork and all that business. And in fact, Lucifer... You know, here we go. Lucifer appears one time. Now, you know Lucifer, Saint Nick, and all this other business. Well, it's not from the Bible. Lucifer appears one time in the Bible. It appears in the Old Testament. Lucifer is a Latin word. The Bible was written in Hebrew, and this is a word that appears in the Septuagint. Now, there might be one or two historians out there to say, no, it is not a Latin word. It is early Greek. Well, it really doesn't matter. The original Old Testament was written in Hebrew, and this whole thing about Lucifer just means Venus. It's just another word for Venus, and it's just a translation of the word, what's its etymology? I don't know the exact word right now, but it has to do with luminosity and luminance and things like this that we apply to bright objects, and it's talking about a king of Babylon that will fall after being a bright and shining star, much like Venus was a bright and shining, might have been a star to them, you know, looked like the sun because it was so bright, looked like, the sun wasn't the stars, that's not the common thought back then. But I just want to leave you with that little setup. What I'm going to do next time we delve into the little bit of things I've been reading about in the Bible, we're going to, okay, so we don't really find anything outside of Christology to prove a historic Jesus. What about things within Christology that actually might say that there was no historical Jesus? Are there things in the New Testament that may lead one to believe and dedicate 10, 15, 20 years of their life, 50 years of their lives to thinking that the New Testament actually states that there was no historical Jesus? Well, not if you read the Gospels. That's definitely Carpenter, the man, the chiseled abs, the man that hung on the cross and performed miracles, did good deeds, exorcised demons, cured blind people, raised people from the dead, walked on water, all those type of magic tricks and things like this, and performed magic, except he didn't wear a wizard hat and all that. You know, a very real physical man. But if you read the epistles, my friend, you might get a very different picture of the person that we have come to call Jesus the Christ. But that's for another time. Thank you, everyone, for joining me. Thanks for being part of A Wiggly World. If you didn't get your fill of Bigfoot bashing and readings from the Bible, believe me, there's plenty in that 114 episodes to tickle your titillators. I'm Wiggly, A Wiggly World.
Thank you.